The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Here we are. It's a Monday again. Another week to get underway and see what we can get accomplished through the week. Going to be a busy week for the Dave Elswick Show. Got a show today. We got Artie. It's going to be here, and Paul's going to be here. We'll talk about the issues of the day. Tomorrow's a travel day for me. State Senator Kim Hammer will fill in for the show. I'll be traveling to Washington, D.C., and then I'll broadcast Wednesday and Thursday from Washington, D.C., from Hold Their Feet to the Fire, dealing with illegal immigration. And to say what's going on in Washington, D.C. is kind of interesting. It would be an understatement with the mayor upset with DeSantis of governor of Florida for sending people up to her city that are illegal. So I'm sure we'll hear plenty about that while we're there in Washington, D.C. I get back late Thursday. Then I get up in the morning and I get in my car and I leave for vacation.
Where are you going?
I'm heading to Florida. Going to be down in Florida for 2 weeks.
All right.
We set that up each year. In fact, we'll put down our deposit when we leave on the 8th and get set up for next year and be ready to go there when that time rolls around again. Love going down there. This is the perfect time to go. All the major groups of tourists are gone. So the families are gone. The college kids are gone. Everybody's gone back to school and whatever. And so we have the beach to ourselves with the people who go down there after Labor Day. So it's a nice time to go down to Florida. The weather is looking good. Doesn't look like the Atlantic is very active right now. So hopefully no ugly hurricanes make their way up towards the Gulf while we're there. But we take that chance by going in September. September, October, November are the three most active months for hurricanes. So it's something that we take chance on so that we can have some peace and quiet while we're there. Because if you're there in the middle of the summer, there ain't no such thing as peace and quiet. Just not that way. There, we go to Panama Beach, so that's where we'll be. The big news right now is that Queen Elizabeth is being interred. And being buried today. This is the last day of the country mourning her passing. And are the kings and the queens all buried in Westminster Abbey? I think that's where they're buried at. I'll look that up and give you a for sure if that's the case. I was watching it this morning. I got up early and tuned in. And what is it, because I was enamored with the Queen? No, it's not the case. She did what she was asked to do. She served with honor and did a good job. And for a long, long time, she was had the coronation back in 1952, year before I was born. I mean, she's the only queen I've ever seen in Britain. And so now you got King Charles III. He's now the king. But, people of Britain loved her. They really, really loved her because she seemed to have her finger on the pulse of the people. Did a good job on that. But I got up this morning and I was, the pomp and circumstance is always something I like to watch in state funerals. I mean, we do the same thing if we have a sitting president or a retired president who passes, and they lay in the rotunda. I was telling Linda this morning as we were watching it, though, I said, those guys that are in Britain are lucky that they only had to carry her coffin from the carriage into Westminster Abbey. Because basically it's a flat surface from the carriage all the way in the abbey, although you go up a couple of steps. It's not like when you got to take an American president, whomever it is that's going to lie in state, in the rotunda of the U.S. Capitol, and they go up that back way, and those stairs are at about a 35-degree angle, and there's a whole lot of stairs. And they got to hold that coffin so that it's level while they go up the stairs.
So they got guys in the front or at their knees.
It's amazing to watch them do it. It really, really is. But they had it. I thought what was interesting is that they don't have a horse pull the gun carriage. It's they had a bunch of sailors in front, and they had these big, thick ropes, and they pulled the carriage to the front of Westminster Abbey. So I thought that was kind of, I thought it was interesting. I find that, my wife makes fun of me because I like Baroque music. Mm-hmm. I like when, you know, there's no music and they're just singing a cappella like that.
Oh, yeah.
And that was great. They were carrying her into the Abbey and they were singing, Baroque type music. Yeah.
Interesting.
It was really great stuff. Anyway, that I'm sure that the royal family is glad that it's over with, because it's been, what, 10 days?
Might have been.
Has it been? I think that's how long the days of mourning were. I mean, that's got to be tough on any family. And I saw, Camilla was there today with Charles and both her kids. And I thought it was kind of interesting that they were saying the 7-year-old daughter and 9-year-old son would be there at the funeral. And I said, why wouldn't they be? You know, once a kid gets past about 5 years old, you figure they can attend the funeral. I know in our family, grandkids didn't all of that. I just thought it was interesting that they thought, well, they're 7 and 9. Now's the time for me. They got to get used to be. Here's what they said. Time to them to get used to being in the royal family.
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember a time when I didn't go to funerals. I mean, Dad took us to funerals, and that's just kind of as part of life, though. It's good for us to think about that.
Well, it's good to see it. Yeah, it truly is. So anyway, that's all being taken care of. That is the big story today. Real big story today. And all of the stuff going on right now around the royal family, I don't care. I mean, I don't, Harry and his brother and the whole nine yards and is it Meghan Markle? Is that her name? Who tries to make everything about her? She's just a spoiled person. And then Camille, people have forgiven her. Now people forget about she's been married to the king for 17 years, but she knew him a lot longer than that. Mm-hmm. Does everybody remember all of that during the time Diana was married to Charles and he was seeing Camilla and they were having their trysts and all that, and then that tape came out, and oh my Lord have mercy. It's crazy. Crazy, I tell you. Mm-hmm. I did find out, it's not Harry, it's the other one, that they wouldn't let him wear his military uniform. And I found out why today. I heard them talking about it. If you are still serving in the military, you can wear your uniform to the funeral. Or if you are an active member in the royal family and you served, you can wear your uniform. Just so happens, he's not an active member of the royal family anymore. Remember? And they got kind of kicked out because they did that interview with Oprah, And that's when Megan said, well, you know, I got there and I could feel the racism. That's what she said about the royal family. I thought that was interesting. And then she came out the next day to say, well, it wasn't the queen. Okay. Like that made it any different.
I don't think it's any secret that at least historically, the British were, shall we say, very proud of their
heritage.
Well, not just their heritage, but also their ethnicity, their race. I think in the past, that was at least something they were very proud of. I don't know what their thinking is now.
Yeah, well, let's not forget though, it was the British who stopped doing, you know, the whole slave trade
right,
thing.
The kidnapping thing.
Long before we got out of it. And, you know, of course, other countries are still involved in it. So it just continues. It does continue. Let's see, I had a story here. Well, here, let's talk about this one. We've been hearing so much about the border. You know, the vice president says the border is secure. She said that last weekend. 199,000 people came across the border in July.
Sounds pretty secure to me.
Yeah, that sounds really secure. It does, doesn't it? But here's the big really big story. A recent Department of Homeland Security intelligence report received by the Border Patrol instructs agents to look for Venezuelan inmates released from entering the U.S., according to a source within CBP. The report, reviewed by Breitbart Texas, indicates that the Venezuelan government, under the leadership of Nicolai Maduro Moros, is purposely freeing inmates, including some convicted of murder, rape, and extortion. The report does not state whether the released prison inmates were traveling as a cohesive group, but does say it was commonly shared knowledge among migrants traveling to the United States within a caravan in July that many of the Venezuelan migrants in the group were convicts and included hardened criminals. Does this remind you of anything?
So are we going to be their penal colony?
No, wait. Does that remind you of anything? It reminds you of Cuba?
They did the same thing.
Oh, yeah. They sent all their convicts over to us. Yeah. Was that during Clinton that they sent all the convicts over? And there were a lot of them. I mean, if you just watch one fictional movie that deals with that, watch Scarface, because that's what that's all about.
I was reading an article that said that Texas, before Biden, was spending $400 million a year to help with Border Patrol, and since Biden was elected, they're spending $4 billion a year.
How about that, huh?
Because, yeah, they're still trying to do their job without any help from the federal government, but they still have a policy. If you're going to let them in, then we're going to bust them up and send them to your city too.
Martha's Vineyard is such a great story. I'm just sorry. That makes me chuckle every time I think about it. In Martha's Vineyard, they sent them 100 illegal immigrants, and you would have thought that they sent the whole country of Mexico.
Well, they get thousands.
It's amazing.
They get that in an hour.
You know, down in Del Rio and those areas down there. All right, let's get our first break in. We'll come back and talk more about this. Immigration is on the front burner. Kind of a great thing for me to have because it goes right along with what I'm going to be doing this week up in Washington, D.C. It's the Hold Their Feet to the Fire meeting going on in D.C. will be just right by the Phoenix Hotel, which is about two blocks away from the Capitol. You're going to hear a lot of different people on Wednesday and Thursday. You'll hear both of our congressmen Wednesday and Thursday. They'll be on with me, and both of our senators are going to be on with us on Thursday as well. So that's all coming up. I don't know who else is going to show up. I got some different guests that I've already got lined up, but I purposely leave a couple of hours, half hours open, because people start coming through and strolling through. We know that Senator Joni Ernst is going to be there. I hope maybe to grab maybe 10 minutes with her and some of the different people. I think I've heard that Ducey is coming from Arizona, too, so be cool to talk to him. All right, don't forget about PI Roofing. Remember, as I've been telling you over this last week, PI Roofing is more than just roofing. Now, they're the best roofing company I know. If you want to get your roof fixed, you should go to PI Roofing. I mean, Agape Church is going to do that. They're going to have them do it. They got four buildings that the folks over at PI Roofing are going to be working on. It's a big, big project. And they had been turned down by their insurance company a little over a year ago, and the insurance company wasn't going to cover the damage to their roof, saying that it was not storm related. And Scott called him up, and of course Joel and his group went over there, and they've got all these weather maps and stuff that they'll show up with, and they were able to show, looking at the wind currents and everything on the days that they occurred.
So a hailstorm had come through.
Yes, they were able to show that weather was a cause, and then they got a letter over at Agape saying, you've been approved to have your roof fixed. And right now, the first stage of that is $280,000 that's being fixed. So bottom line, now, PI Roofing does it again because they're so good at this. But on top of that, if you need any kind of construction or you need windows or you need gutters, they do that as well. They're your one-stop shop now. So call them, 501-707-3115, or visit them online, piroofing.com. All right, back with you. Here on the Dave Ellswick Show, I was just doing some checking here because I'm trying to get that answer when we were talking. And let's see. Okay, Queen Elizabeth, her body. Let's see. Why does all this have to go? Yes, I'll take cookies. The state funeral of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II will take place today. Westminster Abbey and St. Margaret's Church are currently closed for the state funeral, so you don't get a chance to go in and visit them today. Queen Elizabeth was the daughter of King Henry VIII by Anne Boleyn and was born at Greenwich on 7th September 1533, succeeded by her half-sister Mary I, Bloody Mary. Queen Elizabeth was the foundress of the present Collegiate Church of St. Peter in 1560, and it goes all through here giving you all the interesting things about that. Talks about her burial. Don't care about her burial. I'm looking for Queen Elizabeth II. I can't read all this while I'm trying to do this show at time. I can't talk out of... This is why I can't be a politician. I can't talk out of both sides of my mouth. Politicians can do that. You know, they can carry on the show, and then on the other side of their mouth, they can be talking about something else. I can't do that. I can only talk about what's going on. Okay, so I will have that information for you, though, before. But I think Westminster Abbey is where she'll be laid to rest. So this report that came out from the Department of Homeland Security does not state whether the released prisoners are traveling as a cohesive group, but a lot of the migrants that are coming into the country are saying that, yeah, they've been meeting a lot of Venezuelans out of that are former prisoners and whatever. So, quote, unless, here's what's being said by our government, unless we apprehend someone who voluntarily tells us they have been committed, have committed a violent crime in Venezuela. We can only guess, and that doesn't work well. They will more than likely be released into our general public. The source says it is unknown how many have already been released into the interior of the United States to pursue asylum. According to the CBP, between October 21 and July 22, more than 130,000 Venezuelan migrants have been encountered after entering the United States illegally. In all of fiscal year 2020, less than 5,000 were apprehended. This represents an increase of nearly 3,000%. In one Texas-based Border Patrol sector, single groups of hundreds of mostly Venezuelan migrants enter the United States daily. The report does not specify the location or destination of the released convicts. Frustrated by the increased number of migrant crossings along the southwest border, Republican governors in Texas and Arizona and Florida have been sending migrants up to the northeast.
So, they're not coming from Mexican border to Florida.
They're coming across the Mexican border,
and then just going.
But they're coming from Venezuela.
Okay, I guess I'm wondering how are they getting to Florida? Are they just traveling from Texas?
Well, yeah, that's basically. I think that's what DeSantis is doing. We'll talk more about it. I mean, we've got more to talk about on this today.
I saw an article, Texas has sent 7,000 people to D.C.
All right. Stay tuned. We'll have more for you in just a moment. So we've got our answer for you. Heidi, this is something you gotta store away in your gray matter whenever you play Trivial. Do people even play Trivial Pursuit anymore? Anyway, they're taking her from Westminster Abbey, and her is Queen Elizabeth II, to Windsor Castle. That's where they're taking her to. That's 22 miles away, and we're watching it on TV right now. They are walking there and pulling the gun carriage with the coffin on it. So it's a pretty impressive sight, to say the least. It really, really is.
Surely they won't pull it all the way.
I'm assuming they're going to.
22 miles. But how they may.
They're making their way. The guys that are in front that are riding the horses, they're happy that they got horses, I'm sure. That's a long walk.
At that pace, I might almost rather walk.
They said 7 hours. Is that what you said?
Yes. In London, we're going to walk to Windsor. It said it takes 7 hours and 19 minutes to walk.
Wow.
No, they're not walking very fast.
No, that's a long walk.
So, yeah, if they're going to have the funeral today, it would be...
Today is going to be the burial, so that's what they're going to do.
It'd be late in the afternoon by the time they get there.
Yep. She's going to be laid to rest next to Philip, her husband, and they will rest side by side. She said that was one of the things that she demanded, you know, of where she was buried at. So there you go. Hey, don't forget about East End Towing. While I'm sitting here talking about a funeral, let me break away and let's talk about East End Towing real quickly. And if you ever get stuck on the side of the road because your car stops, or maybe your car doesn't stop, maybe the trailer or your boat's on, burns a wheel bearing and you got to pull off to the side, or maybe you're pulling your trailer and something goes wrong with it, know that East End Towing can handle all of those different things that can happen to you. They know how to deal with the situation. East End Towing can handle it. They've got all the answers as far as that goes. They'll make sure you get, if it's your truck or it's your car that went down, they'll make sure it gets to the shop that you want it to go to. All you have to do is call them at 501-888-8849, 501-888-8849. I'm going to tell you what, if there's one thing you can say about the Brits, and look, when I served in the military, I never was on a U.S. base that was in Britain, but I was on Guam, and we had an RAF contingent there at Anderson Air Force Base. So the Australians and the way they carry on is just a whole lot like what the British do. Mm-hmm. And their pomp and circumstances is pretty impressive. I'm just going to tell you, pretty impressive. You know, I mean, these are the people that understood when they were fighting us, we were going to shoot them from behind trees, and they lined up and walked down the middle of the field and said, go ahead, and got shot. You know, just the way that they do business. It's all about British discipline. Discipline.
The Australians, Australia was kind of a colony.
It was a penal colony
for Britain, right?
Yes.
So the Australians were basically British criminals.
That's what they were. And look at what they've become. Goes to say that, you know, ancestors do not carry the sins of the fathers. Let's just put it that way. So you had that. I mean, the French colony was, of course, Devil's Island. That's where they put their prisoners out there. They didn't become a self-sustaining country.
Well, Australia's
but they did give us a good book in Papillon. I'll just say that.
Australia's pretty big. I'm not familiar with Devil's Island. Is it pretty small?
Yeah, it's not a real big island. It was worse than Australia. And Australia had a little bit of a government. Devil's Island, not so much.
It was just a big chaos fest.
Well, you got there, and if you didn't have to be caged, they just put you out on the island, and good luck. Mm-hmm. You know, if you can survive, good luck to you. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll let you live. And that's not a nice island in its day. It's not open any longer. I'm sure if you wanted to visit it, you could probably go see it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead, Artie.
What was the island in California that they sent all the hard Alcatraz? Yeah, mm-hmm. Escape from Alcatraz.
Yeah, and there's a. I guess, I don't know if it's every year, but there's guys that will make that swim.
Oh, now they make it?
Yeah, no, yeah. I've got a friend I go to church with. I think he did that swim. I don't know how many
it's
miles
tough.
It is.
It's a tough swim.
He had a wetsuit, but
yeah, because it is very cold.
But it's, yeah, I don't know how, was it 5 or 6 miles? I don't know.
I don't know how far it is. All I know is that they said if you read the history, there's just one guy that ever escaped from Alcatraz. Mm-hmm. And even that guy, they're not sure of whether he escaped or not.
Oh, because they never found him.
Nope, never found him. And there's all the things about the letters, supposedly, that he wrote to his daughter and things of that nature. But, yeah, no one knows for sure if the guy really made it.
Well, because it's...
I mean, I'm going to tell you, if he looked and he acted like Clint Eastwood, who did the movie about him, he made it.
Well, there was another movie that what's the guy that used to play James Bond?
Sean Connery.
It was Sean Connery in it, where he was the one that swam.
Oh, was that the one with Nicolas Cage, where they were trying to keep the guy from launching the chemical war?
I think so.
Stuff,
yeah, yeah.
Chemicals into
it,
San
yeah.
Francisco.
Yeah, trying to. I can't remember the name.
I don't remember the name of it either, right off the top of my head. But great movie though.
Yeah, I remember seeing that. So yeah, it was Sean Connery, and he was supposedly the only one, I guess, that had ever swam.
He was the one who did it, of course. Of course, Sean Connery could have done it. He was Britain's Clint Eastwood. I mean, just to be honest, it's definitely the way it was. And then the kind of secondary guy that was behind Clint Eastwood and Sean Connery was Charles Bronson. Mm-hmm. Now, R.D. may argue that point with me, because you're a big Bronson fan.
Oh, I just remember seeing all the movies. We went to the drive-in when I was in kindergarten. We saw the Bronson movies and all the Dirty Harry movies and Walking Tall and all the Tough Guys movies. There was a lot of Tough Guys movies in the 70s.
Yes, there were.
Fighting the system or in a corrupt system.
I still like Walking Tall. That's a great movie.
Walking Tall was a good movie. Yeah,
that's a good one. That's true. Was it Busser? Was that his name? Busser, the sheriff. He was.
Yeah.
He was tough, real tough dude. He was
real life. Yeah, real life. Yeah.
Yeah, that whole you walk around with an axe handle. And take care of
business. There was a lot of corruption whenever he was elected.
Yes, he was.
And he didn't handle it all by the book.
No, not even close. Joe Arpaio probably based a lot of his treatment of prisoners on what Tusser did.
Yeah. Because he was shot up. His wife and family shot up.
Yeah, he's lucky he didn't get killed while he was in office. Mm-hmm. But he survived. He was a tough he was a tough cat. Let's just put it that way. All right. So, anyway, again, for everybody who's wondering what's the big story today, you get to work. Say today they're laying to rest Queen Elizabeth II. And I just know if I were part of the family, although I would be missing my mom or my grandmother, I would be happy that it's coming to an end because it's been going on now, 10 days? Is that what it is completely? So that's the case. I'm sitting there, we're watching TV here in the studio. We can see it doing its thing. There's the drummer. On the horse, yeah. He's not keeping the cadence. Usually they're keeping the cadence for everybody who's walking behind. Because if you watch, they're all walking together, all several thousand people that are in the military.
I wonder if they go across any bridges during this, because usually they'll break cadence.
But look at this guy. He looks like he's got a stick in a certain orifice, the way he's walking. It's amazing. They're all dressed up. They're in their red coats. Let you know that. Lucky not a bunch of Yankees that are there visiting aren't showing up with muskets on the side of the road. doing their thing. Anyway, yeah, it's a huge deal. This is they do with their monarchs just like we do with our president, and sometimes even other people who weren't presidents. I mean, Bob Dole, they had a huge funeral for him. Hmm. I remember him. But I'm going to say that he deserved it because not only was he a senator for years and years and years, but he served in World War II.
He was
injured. One of the greatest stories I ever heard him talk about was he said, "Here I am. I was from Iowa. And where did they send me to be in the military? They put him in the mountain crew." You know, where they froze to death there in the mountains.
Isn't Iowa pretty flat?
Oh, yeah. Mm. But they sent him into the Mountain Corps. Mm. And that's how he got injured over in Germany. So, yeah, it's an interesting story about him as well. But I just thought everybody needed to know that we took in all the Cubans, okay, there in Florida under Clinton. Now we're taking in all the Venezuelans. That are coming in
from
as
the
far
prisons,
as
huh?
So do we still have the dry feet policy for Cubans?
I have no idea.
I think at one point, if a Cuban could get on dry land, he could stay. I think that was their policy.
I would think that it would be pretty close to that. That's everybody thinks that's a simple trip because it's only about 30 miles, I guess. From Cuba.
I want to say it's maybe 70 or 90 miles.
Okay. Well, but it's not that far.
It's not that far.
But it is when you're in a bathtub.
Well, right. If you're trying to paddle a bathtub,
you only go across.
A modern day sailboat gets you across it in a day.
Yeah. Well, probably. They're not been doing
if
it
the wind's
that well.
Right. No, right. No, they're probably not. They probably don't have their little Hobie cat or something like that that would take you efficiently.
It's like when you get down to southern Florida, Miami area, those places. The Cubans down there are pretty conservative people. They love the United States of America. They sure would like to be able to get their families that they had to leave behind back and get them to the United States as well. You know, that's what I say. Everybody hates us, our country. A lot of people hate our country that live in our country. But there's a whole lot of people don't live in this country that want to come to this country, even though it's got its warts about it. All right, a break. Pat Davis wants you to know that he'll help you get your medical insurance, save you some money, 30% to 50%, get rid of all those copays, cut off those big, big deductibles, maybe even get you without having any deductibles at all at times. And that'll save you just a lot of money. And if you're a self-employed individual, he can help you specifically. If you have a small business, he can help you afford the health insurance that you want to give to your workers. Talk to Pat by calling him at 501-605-6935. That's 501-605-6935. Or visit him online. It's Your Health Plan Man. That's one word, yourhealthplanman.com. All right, so yesterday I was checking out the website for, you know, business and politics. It's a great website. Keeps you up to date on talk business and politics, on what's going on politically. And looking at it, at their latest talk business and politics survey for Arkansas suggests victories for Senator Bozeman, Sarah Huckabee, and Lieutenant Governor Tim Griffin. He's running for AG. If the election for U.S. Senator were held today, 43.5% of likely voters would vote for Senator Bozeman. 30.5% would vote for Natalie James, so that she's behind by 13 points. Kenneth Cates, the Libertarian, would carry 5%, is what they're saying right now. And the undecided vote is 21%. I don't believe that for a moment. I think people have pretty much made up their minds who they're going to vote for.
I think you're probably right. That election's probably pretty well settled.
I think the governor and the attorney general will settle as well.
I think you're probably right. No, I think the only way that the Republicans don't win those races is if one of these Republicans steps aside or dies, has a heart attack or something. I think that's about the only way these Democrats
get in,
have a chance.
And maybe even not even then, depending on who the Republicans would put in to run for.
I don't know if Republicans can actually replace them, but the thing is that it may very well be the Libertarian candidate would win because people don't want the Democrats.
All right. Sarah Huckabee Sanders holds 51% of the vote. Chris Jones, 40%. He's down by 11%. Ricky Dale Harrington Jr., Libertarian, has 2%. And undecided, and this goes to what we were just talking about, that everybody seems to pretty much made their mind up on that one, 7% are undecided. Just 7. As far as Attorney General goes, Lieutenant Governor Tim Griffin, 49%. Jesse Gibson, 32%. So there's a 17-point difference there. So Griffin is really leading that race. And 19% undecided. So that's what their survey shows.
I'm assuming that here in Arkansas, if nobody gets 50% plus or 50% plus one, then
I don't think that's the case. I don't think that's the case. I think the case is whoever wins.
The plurality.
Yeah.
So if there's 10 people in the race, just the guy with the most highest percentage
would vote.
Wins.
Yeah, would win. As far as that, I could be wrong. I'm not
I know in some races they do have runoffs. If there's
three, the top two.
The top two go to runoff. In the state representative and senators races, I think.
Yes.
Actually, you know what? Back when, this was during the primary in the lieutenant governor, but the AG race, they did have a runoff. But that was during the primary, though, so I don't.
But that's what I'm saying. That's primary. I don't know.
It may be different.
The general is that way or not. I'll look. I'll tell you about it. In the 7 o'clock hour, which we're closing in on already, we've already got an hour in the books, basically, about what's going on here in the wonderful world of Arkansas. Congratulations to the Hogs. They got a wake-up call early on in that game that Missouri State wasn't just going to roll up and be like a cockroach and stick its legs up and die. They actually put up a little bit of struggle for a while, but I think, you know, when you look at teams that are not, you know, major programs, you got to understand that they don't have the depth that, you know, an SEC team does, and you just wear them down. And that's kind of what happened as far as this one on Saturday. Big game this coming Saturday, going down to Dallas, going down to Jimmy World, and going to be playing Texas A&M, who played a good game against who did they play on Saturday? They played a decent team, much better than Appalachian State, and Appalachian State beat Texas A&M the week before. So we're going to see. That's going to be a good game. There's some good games that are out there. This weekend, a lot of weak sisters playing big schools. I mean,
trying to make their numbers look good at the start.
Yeah,
huh?
What is it? Alabama, who are they playing? I think they beat them 69-0. Mm-hmm. And Ohio State beat the team that came in to play them, beat them 79-22 or something like that. Just stomped them into the turf.
Had to give them part of the TV money to get them come down and get whipped.
That's what it's all about. Yeah, you pay them tens of, and in some cases hundreds of thousands of dollars to come in and take a whipping. That's exactly what you do, and hope that something bad doesn't happen. Like Appalachian State, they're the last team that weren't an FCS team. To lose to a team that was an FCS, and it was an Appalachian State. Michigan lost to them. I think that was back in 2015, something like that. Appalachian State, they're in Sun Belt now. They came up in the world some. They're playing. They're always tough. They're tough. And their last two weekends have been really interesting watching their games. They won that game. It was a 61-60 in the second week. And then last week, they were down, and the quarterback threw a Hail Mary. Now, typically, they throw it into the end zone into a big group of people.
Right,
he threw it short, and one of his men were back, at about the 5 or 6 yard line.
He caught it
and ran around the end and ran in for a touchdown. Mm-hmm. And they won in the last second.
Oh, wow.
So 2 weeks in a row. I don't know how long that's going to last for them, but they'll take it while they can, I guess.
Well, that meant they were close, though, if they could win it with a...
Well, yeah, they needed, I think, five points, and they got their...
Right, so they weren't down,
their six
they weren't
or
down
seven.
40 points. And
no, that wouldn't have mattered. You wouldn't even throw in the Hail Mary at that point. Just throw it in the ground and be done with it. All right, we'll take a break. We'll be back. We got more to talk about. There's still some stories out. There's more going on than just immigration. And the Queen Elizabeth is being laid to rest. We'll talk about it when we get back here on the Dave Ellswick Show. If you were wondering, when you look at the predictions for the Arkansas governor's election, the Cook Political Report, Inside Elections, Sabato's Crystal Ball, Political, RCP, Fox News, and 538 all have picked Sarah Sanders to win. It is a solid R. In the categories of who do you think is going to win?
They took a big risk on their reputation to make those predictions,
yeah,
didn't they?
And something a lot of people don't know, we've talked about it here on the show. The general election is notable since a Sanders win would mark the first time in Arkansas history that Arkansans have voted for two consecutive Republican governors.
That's interesting.
Remember, they voted for Asa twice in a row, but not two different candidates. This time it would be two different candidates, and Sarah would be the first woman to be elected governor in the state of Arkansas.
You feel like that the Republicans have been in charge for a long time, but they really
have not. basically, I mean, since 2010, 13 years. Is about what it is, and that for a conservative electorate, legislature, and a really conservative governor. This would be the first time. Just letting you know, this would be the first time, because everybody would admit that Asa is a moderate. Even Asa says he's a moderate. You know, just so you know.
Yeah, no, he did. I think he never really said that he wanted smaller government. I think he actually even kind of came out and said that he intends to grow government. He just didn't want to raise taxes. He wanted to grow government by increasing the tax base, I guess. And then if he wants to grow the economy, then he can grow government with that. And so I think there's no secret that Asa Hutchinson likes big government. He just kind of wants to do his big government. He wants conservative socialism.
I told Dave whenever he got elected, we'll give him 8 years and we'll look back BB's at 8 years and we'll see how much the government grew the most.
That's true. That's going to be interesting to look at. I think we can all agree that I think Asa grew it more.
Probably so.
As far as, I mean, he cut taxation. But now you can't just look at taxation. You got to see how much money taxes were bringing in.
He raised taxes, too. Everybody says, well, he cut taxes. He did cut some taxes.
But taxes.
He raised some taxes.
Right. And so fuel taxes got raised. The internet download tax was one that when it was passed, I think it was a very small tax. But it was just kind of on the verge of internet downloads becoming a very popular thing, and now they're very popular. But back when it was passed, a few people were doing it, I think. But
yeah, they didn't have any clue they were going to get the hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars.
I bet they did have a clue. I bet they knew that. I bet they almost were certain that was coming, and I think that's one of the reasons why they did it, because they could pass it as a revenue neutral thing, but when in reality it was going to be a huge tax increase.
Wow. No, they got a lot of money out of it. There's no doubt about it.
I think they probably did, and I think they continue to get lots of money out of that.
Yeah, go ahead, Artie. What are you going to say?
Well, that was in the veterans' package.
Yeah, that was.
Yep.
If you want to do anything, if it's going to cut taxes, you better show to where you're going to get some taxes to replace that money.
Well,
they have not reduced the budget any.
This is where I was, I got a lot of guff from fellow veterans who were saying, I can't believe you don't think that they should pass that. And I said, I don't want to get a tax cut on the back of other Arkansans. And that's exactly what the veterans did. They got a tax cut on the backs of other people that live here in the state. I don't think that's right. That's because one of my terms that I hate, it had to be revenue neutral.
It wasn't even neutral.
No, I don't think it was.
But I'm just saying, if they say revenue neutral, you know what that means? It means somewhere they're not cutting taxes, they're raising taxes.
They did raise taxes, and I think the reality was that it wasn't anywhere close to revenue neutral. It was a huge tax increase.
Now, that's the bottom line. You know, they play this game all the time. And it was under the Bush administration that revenue neutral kind of crap really got it started. It's time that we move away from it. If the Republicans win the House, and by chance, and they got about 60% chance, win the Senate, then I'm going to be interested to see if they truly cut spending like they're talking about right now. Because that's what you got to do first if you really want to cut taxes. You got to cut spending. And that's something that they're going to deal with here in the legislature here in Arkansas.
I mean, are we going to promote freedom? I mean, look at all the places where they've been very...
Yeah, look at all the places where they've been moderate on freedom. I mean, whenever a good bill comes up, as far as the Second Amendment, they've got to water it down so the Walmart and all the companies won't make them mad. You've got to water it down to when you get it passed. It's only, you know, it sounds good, but it really doesn't do anything. So we've had weakened down Second Amendment bills that amount to little to nothing. They've done a pretty good job with. They've done an excellent job with abortion, That's one thing that we do have to give them credit for.
That's one of the few things they've been pretty hardcore on. But a lot, like you said, a lot of the other things, like the general liberty type stuff, right to keep and bear arms. We haven't seen big strides there. We've seen some small strides back about, what was it, about 10 years ago now, when Denny Altus passed the bill that allowed you to carry without a permit. It just clarified a law that was actually just being twisted by the state police, I think, was the gist of that. Because we had a law on the books that said you couldn't carry with intent to use against a person, and the state police and others were twisting that law to say that meant you couldn't carry for self-defense purposes, which is absurd. But they were interpreting it that way, and I think part of that was probably some leftover Jim Crow type laws, if you will, for the purposes of keeping black people from carrying guns.
Well, whenever you look at a lot of the laws, I mean, Arkansas ranks in the like in the 30 range when it comes to freedom. There's many Democratic states that have more freedom than the state of Arkansas has. We've only been, you know, we've only had the House and the Senate and the governor's race and the governor's for 8 years, but we haven't made a whole lot in educational freedom. We haven't made any real strides there.
We've made very, very small strides. I'm hoping with the election of Sarah that we will see education be on the front burner. And by the way, while we got Sarah and we're talking about her, I want to congratulate and say that I was glad to hear that her operation went well on Friday, and she is cancer-free. Hmm. She had thyroid cancer, and they took care of that, and they kept that pretty well quiet. Mm-hmm. You know, she went into surgery Friday, came out, and her doctor proclaimed her cancer-free.
Thyroid can really mess with your with the way you live.
A lot of things, yeah. That little tiny... little tiny piece of equipment that you've got messes with a lot of things. So anyway, she's healthy and she's doing well. She was off the campaign trail for a little bit. Says that she'll be back on now. I would think that she needs a couple more days to just kind of maybe relax and recover, and then she can get back in the last 5 weeks of the campaign, really hit it. And hit it hard.
But I think you're...
And I don't know how hard she's going to have to hit it. Looks like she's got a pretty close to insurmountable lead.
I think you're probably right there. I think she'd have to do something pretty drastic to lose this. But I think you're right about the school choice thing. I think that's a real possibility this session, and it's a step in the right direction. It's not a perfect idea, but it's still a step in the right direction, I think, to help get some of the influence away from the bureaucrats over children.
Well, if they get the money to follow the students, it's a huge step.
I think it's significant.
Then, yeah, that's not a small step. That would be a huge step. And I've heard, and I don't have any kind of inside people working in Sarah's campaign or anything, but I have heard that she has two or three people that are on her team that came from Arizona. And of course, Arizona just went from zero school choice to universal school choice. Wow. As Ducey said, the governor, we went from zero to 100.
Wow.
And I'm going to be interested to see what kind of impact they have on Sarah's campaign.
That would be great. That would be great. Just watch the definitions. You know, whenever they like to name things good things and put things in the paper that sound good. But yeah, we'd like to see something in Arkansas from 0 to 100. We've seen it go from like 39 to 41, maybe. But
I don't even think it was 41.
No, that's
39 and a half.
Yeah. But we do need to be careful with the legislation that gets presented, because we don't want to restrict current homeschoolers and get more testing on them and more scrutiny and such. So we need to be careful with that kind of legislation to make sure that while we're giving out the vouchers, that we're not
don't use
restricting
that word.
the rights.
It's scholarships.
Scholarships, whatever you want to call it. But when we're
can't say vouchers anymore.
But we might trigger the government bureaucrats.
There's many Democratic states. Educational freedom right now is something that polls Democrat and Republican.
Yep.
It's polling good on both sides. I mean, so the Democrats support it. There's many states.
Well, I think the rank and file Democrats, the voters, I think probably tend to like it more than the politicians themselves.
So I mean, it's universal across party lines that. Educational freedom, and you can say, well, they have school choice now. Well, yeah, they can go from Cabot to Ward. You know, that school choice, they can't go.
We're not talking about that school choice. We're talking about real school choice.
Right, so basically, if you're tired of your kids getting bullied in school or getting lousy teachers that are abusive or just lazy, it would give you the choice to have a scholarship, if you will, that would take that money and take your kids to a different
private school
or homeschool.
Or you could use it on
religious school.
So even sure. Maine, the Supreme Court just addressed that for Maine.
Yep.
Maine, of all places, has school choice, and we don't.
Well, you'd be surprised at a lot of things that they... The freedoms that they have up in the Northeast, it's just that they tax the living tar out of them.
You know, you look at New Hampshire, when you look at the ranking as far as freedom, Florida's always way up there as far as freedom, but New Hampshire is usually number one.
Live free or die. That's your state motto.
That's right.
That's what it is. Although, in the really important issues, they died a long time ago. Just telling you. All right, 7:19. We need to get a break in. Let's do that. Then we'll come back and talk further about things that are going on politically here in the United States and specifically here in Arkansas. We had another murder in Little Rock over the weekend. Happened down on Baseline Road. Mr. Mayor, what are you doing about it? You haven't changed enough of something yet, and we still got all kinds of problems. All right, David Lucas Financial wants you to know they're out to help you figure out how much precious metals you should be adding to your nest egg, to your retirement account, to cover all this inflation that's going on here in the country. Don't let 1970s-style inflation destroy your retirement. Learn how silver and gold could help you protect your assets, your IRA, your 401k, and all of that hard-earned money that you've put aside. All you got to do is call 501-222-3315. That's 501-222-3315. Know that the folks at David Lucas Financial work with one of the only regulated and licensed national wholesalers in the country. So you get direct prices from a dealer that you can trust. And that's important that you know that the dealer you got is giving you the best deal possible. 501-222-3315, investment advisory service offered through David Lucas Financial, an Arkansas registered investment advisor. By the way, when you're coming in today, they're going to bring, if you're coming in on I-30 over the I-30 River Bridge, they have moved both sides east and west of on I-30 onto the new bridge. Now, I noticed something about it this morning that is something new to that, and that is let's say you're going westbound, if you're heading towards Dallas, as you come across the bridge and you're going to be exiting, let's say exit for 6:30, there is a snake turn kind of in there that is totally different than what you've ever met going over the wiggle turn that's before you get on the bridge. They didn't get rid of it. They left it there on the bridge. I don't know if it'll be there after the other side is done or not, but when you travel over the bridge, there is a pretty it moves to the left, if I'm correct about it. But if you're not ready for it, it can make you move into the other lane of traffic. And that's, you noticed that, RD?
Oh, yeah, I noticed
morning.
It.
Yeah.
You better be paying attention.
I mean, it comes up on you quick. It really, really does. So be aware that as you're going across the bridge, there's that kind of a It's not a turn. It's just a...
You just got to follow the legs.
It's a wiggle, as I like to say, that they put into it. But they do. At least I'll give them this credit. Unlike how long it took them to do the lines in Cabot, they got the lines done this weekend going over the bridge. So you know where your lane is. That's been a problem on Highway 5 for a few weeks. They finally got it done now. They went out and put all the turn lanes in and put the arrows down and all of that kind of stuff. All right, so over the weekend, I don't know if you caught this or not. It was a story, but didn't make a lot of headlines or anything. President Biden warned Russian President Vladimir Putin against using nuclear weapons in the Ukraine in a televised interview while declining to say what the consequences would be from the United States if he were to do so. Biden's warning comes after Ukraine's successful counteroffensive in the northeastern region that reportedly took Russian troops by surprise, causing them to pull back. On 60 Minutes, they played a clip from the president. Don't. That's what he said. What he tell Putin? You'll change the face of war, unlike anything since World War II. That's what Biden said he would tell President Putin if the Russian leader is contemplating the use of tactical nuke or chemical weapons. Axios said the Kremlin last week said that Russia would continue to wage its war in Ukraine until all its military goals have been achieved, despite facing a rapidly advancing Ukrainian counteroffensive. In March, a Kremlin spokesperson said that Russia would only use nuclear weapons if there's a threat for existence to the country and not due to the war with Ukraine. So
that's reassuring.
They're throwing some stuff. Putin's throwing some stuff out there. How serious he is about it is questionable. But know that a small tactical nuke is totally different than all-out nuclear war.
Well, yeah, because some of the bigger bombs would cause fallout. They could drift a long ways. I don't know about the tactical nukes. I don't know what the...
Very small yields.
I don't know what the ramifications are of basically poisoning the air downwind.
And they figure not that bad. That's what they like to say. So, not that bad. But here's the key. What if you hit something within the area that you use the nuke that you release, I don't know, chemicals into the air, or you hit the nuclear reactor that's there in Ukraine.
What, instead of a housing complex or an elementary school?
Yeah, that they've been hitting all the time. Well, those are not as bad as if you would hit a nuclear reactor.
They might.
They're bad enough, I'll grant you.
Ends up being effectively a dirty bomb.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It would
be another Chernobyl.
But that could apply to any type of conventional explosive. It wouldn't have to be a tactical nuke.
We don't need any more Chernobyls. One was enough.
Well, I mean, we had the earthquakes in Japan a few years ago that wrecked one of their nuclear plants, and the nuclear plant was rated for earthquakes, but just not that heavy of an earthquake.
Did you see Taiwan got hit by an earthquake yesterday? 6.8.
Really? Okay. Wow,
that's pretty strong earthquake. Haven't heard much about what kind of damages and things happened because of that. But they suffered a 6.8 yesterday. All right, we got about a half hour left. Let's get back here after Bill O'Reilly and talk more craziness here in the country. Denver to give out $12,000 in free phones with year-long plan to homeless trans people and non-binary people. We'll talk about that. Oh, my gosh. We'll talk about that. When you heard me right. We'll talk about it when we come back here on the Dave Elswick Show. We are back with you here on the Dave Elswick Show. When you think that things have gotten crazy and can't get any more crazy, you find out that you're wrong. That absolutely it can get crazier. I'll tell you how crazy it can get. But first, let me tell you about Billy Mack. Billy Mack's the owner of ICU Protection. I got on ICU Protection about 5 months ago, and I've been nothing but pleased by it. They do a fantastic job. Now I have all the door and window sensors. I have a couple of outdoor cameras. I've got some motion detection. And on top of all of that, I've got the analytics, which is true detection. And it can tell you if it's a person, animal, or car that your security system's picking up on. Now, that's good for your house, and it's good for your business as well. The commercial has the digital panel. Mine's right there in my dining room. The door and window sensors, the indoor and outdoor cameras, the building control access is something for commercial. Analytics that they have, they got business activity at Atlantics as well, and they even do intercom systems. So something to take a look at with ICU Protection. On top of all of what I just told you, they also tell you all you're going to pay for is the service. You will not pay for any of the hardware that you're going to put on your house. It's just a service that you pay for with ICU Protection. Remember, give Billy Mack a call. Let him talk to you. He'll walk you through all of this, and you can walk away within a week or week and a half having a brand new security system in your home or at your business. Call them at 501-205-1333. That's 501-205-1333. All right, craziness. Let's go to Denver, Colorado. If you want to know craziness, here you go. Are you ready for this? Denver is set to provide 140 homeless transgender and non-binary people with $12,000 in no-strings-attached cash to help lift them out of destitution and combat the encampments and soaring crime rates that they're dealing with and plaguing the Mile High City. The city has allocated $2 million from the American Rescue Plan Act. Now, that's for COVID. So understand they took, you know, all those billions of dollars of tax money for COVID, and now they're not even using it for COVID. And in this case, they're calling it the American Rescue Plan Act from the government to fund the program, which will be run by the Denver Basic Income Project, to mainly get women, transgender and non-binary people housed. Reported in Axios, let me run through how this is going to work. 520 people in Denver will get $12,000 for 1 year as part of the project. 260 people will get $6,500 up front and $500 a month for 11 months. 260 people will receive $1,000 monthly over the course of a year. 300 people will be part of a control group and get a $50 a month stipend to determine whether there's a difference in outcomes. And then finally, Matt Connolly says, Denver's using $2 million in taxpayer money to give homeless people a free cell phone along with a year of free cell service. And, yeah, $12,000 in taxpayer money to go along with that as well.
So they're going to have a program in place that discriminates against people who are not transgender or non-binary, whatever it might be. So they're going to have discriminate.
I guess they're discriminating across all races and
across
the board. Because
so if you're not
a male or a female, then we're
it's something then, to keep then, in mind.
Yeah, I mean they can discriminate, but if anybody else does, it's wrong, right?
Yeah, this is really amazing to me. You know, we got all this money And we don't need it now because COVID's in our rearview mirror. So they sent us all this money. Let's figure out what we want to do with
it. How can we promote our
Let's
agenda.
Change society, right? Let's promote bad behavior, sin, bad behavior.
Right. You've got confused people that need some help. And instead of helping them to become less confused, let's go ahead and reinforce their confusion.
Women, transgender, and non-binary people. To get them housed.
Women? So they're on the list?
Women, they're number one.
So women, trans, just everybody but male. If you identify as a male.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like that. And I'm sure skin color plays a part in it as well, though they'll not say that. And I like how they did this. They broke it up so that not everybody just gets $12,000. Some people get $12,000. Some people get $6,500 up front and then $500 a month for 11 months. 260 people get $1,000 monthly over the course of a year. 3,000 or 300 people will be part of a control. I love this one. They're going to be part of a control group. They'll get a $50 a month stipend to determine whether there's a difference in outcomes. I guess that means, you know, in case they want to make sure they use clean needles or something. Just saying.
Well, the $50 a month stipend for the control group may just be so that they'll report back.
I have no idea.
Just so they can kind of keep track of them.
It's kind of weird. It's just
we're not really talking about smart people out
this
there.
This is universal pay. We've been hearing them. They've been wanting to do this for a long time.
Universal basic income thing.
Yeah, they do it over in England already.
Right. What's interesting about that is England and the U.S. I think they're kind of neck and neck for government regulation in many respects.
Neck and neck of who wants to be the most socialist.
Right. Yeah, right. No, that's what I'm saying is they're kind of neck and neck. Both the U.S. and England are pretty bad about restricting people's rights. And this is one of those things that when people's rights are restricted to be able to work in various different industries and wherever else, it really puts a strain on some of the population because maybe they've got a skill, but it's illegal because they don't have a license or whatever it may be. And it takes a while to get a license in some of these things. Like maybe you learn how to cut hair and you're pretty good at it, but you move to a state where you have to get a license to be a barber. And it takes you a year to become a barber or whatever it may be. And in the meantime, you can't afford to go to school and get your license because it's illegal, because you still have to pay bills. And so some of these things get in the way and the universal basic income is one of those things that sort of ends up being a stopgap, which is a bad solution to the problem of overregulation by government. But sometimes I think that it might actually help reduce crime, like you see in England, because it keeps people from becoming totally destitute. I don't think it's a good idea, but I think it sometimes helps to reduce crime.
Well, it's nothing more than a direct
payment
from people who are working to people who are not working.
It's a welfare check.
Like Obamacare.
Yeah, let's not make any ifs, ands, or buts about this. This is at least... This particular project here, they're taking money that was taken out of your pocket for COVID and using it to give to people that they think need the money.
Well, it's promoting their agenda. What, transgender and non-binary? They're incentivizing the behavior that they want. People will do whatever you incentivize them to do. And they are incentivizing people to identify as something other than a male and a female.
Well, the whole old saying is, if you want less of something, tax it. If you want more of something, don't. That's the bottom line.
Well, pay them.
That's the way we're in here. They're going to give them money. Yeah.
So it's sad that what this country is coming to, and at some point it will fail. You can't have that across the board. But
well, I think the solution is give people opportunities by taking away the the impediments that get in people's way. And one of the issues you see is some of the homelessness, I think, is at least partially caused by the fact that housing is so incredibly expensive, and part of that is because government gets in the way of investors providing low cost housing. I would like to build some low cost housing, but part of the reason why I don't is because I don't want to have that kind of relationship with the government.
It's destruction of the family also.
Right. I agree.
You destroy the family. You know, God had a plan for society, and
that's huge.
Yeah, God has a plan for society, and it works God ways. Sin is the problem with this country. If everybody followed the plan that God has, then name a problem in this country that is not caused by sin.
I mean, not much. I mean, there may be a few diseases out there. I mean, you can't necessarily blame cancer on sin, but the reality is that, right, society is falling apart because people sin. And family, the point about family is a really big issue. When we've got huge percentages of the population that grow up without their parents being married, it's just
or
chaos.
Or with not even a father in the household.
Right, right. Some of them don't even know their own fathers.
No, don't have a clue.
Then we got the government, you know, over the adoption situation and how messed up that is. So,
yeah, we know how well that's working.
Right. Yeah,
well,
yeah.
Right,
so
DHS.
There, you might find that there's you get them out of there, it might become a little bit more you know, easier to adopt because it won't cost an arm and a leg.
Has anybody seen the budget for DHS for Arkansas?
No, DHS. I saw what Gillespie is leaving.
Is that right?
Yeah, she's done.
Huh. Well, that ought to save us a little bit of money.
Maybe.
That'll save us a little bit of money. I guess her socialism. Hey, she was an expert from Romney on socialized medicine, and I guess she accomplished what she's came to do. We've got Obamacare all Republicanized, so it's real efficient.
I think she's leaving because ASA's leaving.
Yeah,
it won't be as easy to get that money anymore after ASA's gone. All right, we got a break. When we come back, bad news on the military front. I'll tell you all about it and discuss it with our other members of the power panel, R.D. Hopper and Paul Calvert, when we return here on the Dave Elswick Show. We're back with you here on the Dave Elswick Show. So, a story today in Fox News, very interesting story. The U.S. military's all-volunteer force is in jeopardy. In the 5 decades since the conscription ended, that happened during the time that I was in college, in fact, the AVF produced a high-quality force that it promised, and we were able to go to conflict after conflict and handle the people that we met on the battlefield. That's not the case anymore. Today, the armed services are struggling to meet their recruiting goals like rarely before. Why do you think that you hear more and more about robotics and things of that nature and using robots to fight our wars? The Army is the most affected, projected to fall short by up to 15,000 soldiers, with a larger deficit expected next year. Experts point to a variety of reasons. Let me run through them. Insufficient pay and benefits, a difficult work-life environment, culture wars issues, COVID, and a strong job market. And even if each were fixed, the main core issue is still going to be there. The fact is that the pool of Americans aged 17 to 24 who are qualified and interested in serving continues to shrink. You know, back in 2018, 71% of the 34 million young people could not meet the military's entry requirements due mostly to obesity, drug use, physical and mental health problems, and criminal misconduct. 4 years later, that number is even higher. Further, of the 23% that are eligible to serve today, another 10% don't meet the military's academic standards. Worse, of the 3.5 million young Americans remaining, only 9% have a proclivity to serve. A nation of 332 million people should be able to do better than that. The numbers are all heading in the wrong direction, driven by broader cultural and lifestyle trends in a population unfamiliar with the less than 1% of the U.S. population that are in uniform that protects them. When the draft ended in 1973, most young people had a family connection to the armed forces who could explain military life and encourage service to the country. Today, that number is far lower. Major reductions in the size of the U.S. military and in the number of bases across the country after the Cold War's end contributed to the problem. A knowledge gap has grown over time due to civilians' lack of interaction with those in uniform. This has led to an identity gap that inhibits many from considering a stint in the armed forces. It's no mystery why a military caste has developed in America, with nearly 80% of today's service members having a family member that served. All of this affects a broader set of civil-military relations with which the nation is wrestling. The scope and scale of those trends are beyond the ability of the Pentagon to remedy. There are actions the services can and are taking, but these only address the problem at the margins, because the ability of the military to defend the country depends directly on a sizable force of top-notch volunteers. This is a national challenge that must be addressed at the highest levels. So how long do you all think it'll be before the United States grapples with this problem seriously and starts looking at mandatory military service? No ifs, ands, or buts about it. No deferments to get out of it or whatever. Doing like the Israelis do, and you do 2 years whether you like it or not. Do we end up there?
I don't know. I think comparing the population now to what you would have seen maybe during the time of World War One or World War Two is just no comparison, hardly. I think we've had so many generations now that have softened the people, especially men. And so back in World War One and World War Two, and probably even in the Vietnam era, there were a lot of solid, hardcore men. Today, I think we're just not producing those. There's just a bunch of boys that can grow up and play video games, well, and watch porn, and they're pretty good at those things. But being hardcore solid men is just not something they're very good at.
Well, we need to raise patriots. The curriculum in the public schools has a lot to do with it. We have got to raise patriots. We need to teach history, that this is a great country that's improved the standing of the whole world through the experiment of freedom and people having the right to choose what they want to do. We have to raise patriots.
And that freedom is not free.
That's absolutely not free.
That's exactly right.
It takes work. You've got to actually take the licks with the freedom. And part of the nature of freedom is that you have the freedom to fail also. And a lot of Americans have just decided, well, we don't want the freedom to fail. We want government to hang that teat out there for us to suck and to protect us from failure.
All right, Artie, you get the last say.
It comes back to family. And I tell you what, if you have strong families and you have strong children and children that are raised with good morals and values and willing to serve.
All right, so we'll leave you with that. I'll be back at 9 o'clock. We'll talk further about this story and others when we return. The Dave Elswick Show on a Monday. I, as of Friday, will be on vacation. I'll be in D.C. on Wednesday and Thursday. But on Friday, heading on vacation, will not be back for a couple weeks. So, guys, enjoy your time off. No checks in the mail, though. Sorry.
You already get paid for all we're worth.
That's right. Thanks for being with us thoroughly this morning. We'll see you again at 9 o'clock, or I will, here on 101.1 FM, The Answer. All right, back for the final hour of the Dave Elswick Show today on a Monday. Of course, the big news still going on right now for the world is the internment now of Queen Elizabeth II. Let me give you some background here. Great story just coming across by Breitbart. The state funeral for Queen Elizabeth II once again highlights the deep faith of the monarch, who was scrupulous in keeping her political and social beliefs to herself, but did not shy from sharing her belief in Christ. The state funeral today in Westminster Abbey, which is the most ancient foundations of which date to the reign of St. Edward the Confessor, almost 1,000 years ago, was thought to be the greatest gathering of world leaders and crowned heads in history. Representatives from many world religions, including Buddhism, Hinduism, Judaism, Islam, were present, but the Christian character of the service was undeniable. Readings from Christian scripture greeted the Queen's coffin as it processed itself into the abbey, first among them the iconic words of the book of John, "I am the resurrection and the life, saith the Lord. He that believeth in me, though he were dead, yet shall he live, and whosoever liveth and believeth in me shall never die." On a humbling note, given the British pomp and circumstance of the day's events, were the equally iconic words from Timothy and Job. Quote, "We brought nothing into this world, and it's certain we can carry nothing out. The Lord gave, and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." A so-called royal peculiar, Westminster Abbey, is under the direct authority of the monarch as supreme governor of the Church of England, an Anglican denomination rather than a clergyman and not part of any diocese. The Church of England was not the only Christian denomination represented at the state funeral, however, with representatives from the Roman Catholic Church, Eastern Orthodox denominations, and Oriental Orthodox denomination also present, alongside various strands of Protestantism, perhaps most notably the Church of Scotland, a Presbyterian church that the monarch is bound by oath to defend. Quote, "Let us give thanks to God for Queen Elizabeth's long life and reign, recalling with gratitude her gifts of wisdom, diligence, and service," said the Reverend Dr. Ian Greenshields, moderator of the General Assembly of the Church of Scotland, during the prayers. "God, from whom cometh everything that is upright and true, accept our thanks for the gifts of heart and mind that thou didst bestow upon thy daughter Elizabeth, and which she showed forth among us in her words and deeds, and grant that we may have grace to live our lives in accordance with thy will, to seek the good of others, and to remain faithful servants until our lives end, through Jesus Christ our Lord," he continued. The commendation was read by the Archbishop of Canterbury, the de facto leader of the Church of England, at least in terms of how he is treated by the media. "Let us commend to the mercy of God, our Maker and Redeemer, the soul of Elizabeth, our late Queen," he said. "Go forth, O Christian soul, from this world, in the name of God the Father Almighty, who created thee, in the name of Jesus Christ, Son of the living God, who suffered for thee, in the name of the Holy Spirit, who was poured out upon thee and anointed thee, in communion with all the blessed saints, and aided by the angels and archangels and all the armies of the heavenly host, may they proclaim this day, be in peace, and thy dwelling in the heavenly Jerusalem." Following the state funeral service, the Queen's coffin was transported to St. George's Chapel at Windsor Castle for a final public service and interment alongside her late husband, Prince Philip. So, whole lot of Christian scripture read during the Queen's funeral. It was known that she was a Christian, that she believed in Christ, that she placed her faith in Christ, and so she made it known at her funeral. By the way, the Queen, well, they sat down with her a long, several months, years ago. I don't know how long it's been. It's been quite a time. And, you know, they planned out to the last moment of this whole thing through her. She gave her authority on all of this to be done that way. So she wanted everybody to understand where she put her faith at and where she wanted you to know what you wanted to know about her and where her beliefs rested. Well, you know, I talk about the deaths that we're having here in Little Rock quite often. And we have anywhere from one to five every weekend, it seems like. Well, we're not in the same league as what Chicago is. Now, I grew up outside of Chicago, and the violence that's going on now in Chicago was nothing like that when I was growing up outside the city. Nearly 60 people were shot, 9 of them fatally, during this weekend in Mayor Lori Lightfoot's Chicago. 45 people were shot, 5 of them fatally, Friday into Sunday morning alone. ABC 7, Chicago Sun-Times, reports that by Monday morning, this morning, the number of shooting victims had risen to 58, with 4 additional shooting fatalities. CBS News explains that there was a heightened surge of violence late Sunday afternoon. 5 men were injured, 2 killed during 2 separate shootings Sunday that happened just minutes apart. 3 men were shot and injured on 97th and Escobana in South Deering at about 4:25 p.m. 5 minutes later, 4 men were shot on a front porch near 61st and Evans by someone in a blue Chevy Impala. 2 of the 4 died. 2 were hospitalized. I mean, you can't even sit on your porch in Chicago anymore, certain parts of the city. It's just a flat-out shooting range there. ABC points out that a 3-year-old girl was among the weekend's wounded. She was in the back seat of a vehicle in the 4200 block of West Cermak around 11 p.m. when someone in another vehicle opened fire. The rear glass of the vehicle shattered. The girl received lacerations on her head. A 10-year-old boy was shot and wounded Friday night between 8:30 and 8:40 as he walked with his father in the 1000 block of East 93rd Street in Burnside. The boy is hospitalized in good condition with a gunshot wound in his left leg. The Sun-Times Chicago Homicide Database shows that 493 people were killed in Chicago between January 1st of this year through September 18th of this year. 493. 493. And we still got several months to go. There's no time. They're going to get into the 600 range. Fairly simple. That's what's going to happen. But that's what's going on in Lori Lightfoot's city of Chicago. She does not have that city under control in any way, shape, or form. It's terrible what's going on over there. Really, really is. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back with more here on the Dave Ellswick Show, I need to remind you about Hillcrest Designer Jewelry and what's going on with Eric Coleman. Eric Coleman does it all. I mean, he repairs and cleans jewelry. He does that for his customers at Hillcrest Designer Jewelry, and he does it for many of the customers. You wouldn't know it. They don't publicize it. But a lot of the big jewelers that are around here in Little Rock and the surrounding suburbs take all of their work over to Eric, and he does all that fixing for them as well. Because he's a great jeweler, just a fantastic jeweler. He could create something absolutely unique for you. He can show you something that's in his display cases, and he can fix your jewelry, clean your jewelry, take care of your jewelry. He's got plenty of gemstones to choose from if you want a specific ring built by Eric. Now, if you're looking for something like that, specific like that for Christmas time, you need to get over and talk to Eric now. You need to sit down with him and talk to him about what you want done and talk about a time frame. He's located at 3000 Cavanaugh Suite E. If you want to talk to him on the phone, you can call him at 501-246-3655. He'd rather you just stop by. He's open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. 40 years of experience. The man is just an incredible jeweler. That's Hillcrest Designer Jewelry. All right, back with the show as we continue finishing up on a Monday. Want to get back in talking about this with you, about what's going on here in our country as well as the world. The overriding story today is the burial of Queen Elizabeth II. President Joe Biden admitted that his student loan bailout is illegal during a CBS News interview that aired on Sunday night. Biden made the remarks during an interview on CBS News 60 Minutes with Scott Pelley. Mr. President, first Detroit auto show in 3 years. Is the pandemic over? Pelley asked. The pandemic is over, Biden responded. We still have a problem with COVID. We're still doing a lot of work on it, but the pandemic is over. If you notice, no one's wearing masks. Everybody seems to be in pretty good shape. And so I think it's changing. And I think this is a perfect example of it. Biden's remarks generated widespread backlash on both sides of the political aisle, but for vastly different reasons. The mandates must end immediately, all of them, journalist Megyn Kelly tweeted. And if they don't, new legal challenges must be filed ASAP. President Biden's declaration on 60 Minutes that the pandemic is over, which his administration also argued when ending Title 42 back in May, confirms the illegality of his attempt to transfer hundreds of billions of dollars of student debt to the taxpayer. National Review writer Charles Cook tweeted out textually the OLC's interpretation of the 2003 HEROES Act was preposterous from top to bottom. But even if one were to cynically ignore all that, the lack of an emergency would render the whole thing moot. Biden has just admitted on TV he's breaking the law. Congressman Thomas Massie of Kentucky said if the pandemic is over, as Biden said, then all of the president's emergency powers predicated on a pandemic, all COVID vaccination mandates, the emergency powers of every governor, emergency use authorizations, and the PREP Act should all be voided today. I mean, look, if the pandemic's over, we don't need all that stuff. Of course, the CDC says, COVID's still out there, so we need all that. But that's not what the law is predicated on. The law is predicated on it being a pandemic, all right, which is basically a worst-case scenario that you got going on. So keep that all in mind as they continue to say all this. Governor DeSantis was at a big rally last night in Florida, and when he came out and started talking about Martha's Vineyard, he got a standing ovation. DeSantis made his remarks at a rally in Kansas for Kansas State Attorney General Derek Schmidt. The arrival of the immigrants and the subsequent effort to get them transported post-haste from the wealthy island dominated the news last week. Quote, the one place in the country where we see virtually no law and order is at the southern border. And this is a crisis, DeSantis said, before saying with a grin, it's now getting a little more attention. That prompted a standing ovation from the crowd as DeSantis insisted, quote, this is a crisis. It is a crisis, and it's a manufactured crisis because of Biden's foiled policy. Speaking of the reaction of the residents of Martha's Vineyard to the illegal immigrants, DeSantis pointed out, you're talking about 50 people. That's how many illegals there were. Did they get them employed? Did they get them set up? No. They called out the National Guard, and they deported those people off the island the very next day. He also noted that he knew just how devoted Kansans were to their beloved Kansas City Chiefs, quipping that organizer of the rally said they wanted to do it on a Sunday afternoon, and I said the Kansas City Chiefs better not be playing. DeSantis voiced his support for Schmidt, telling the crowd, you have a legislature here that will produce a lot of good legislation. You just need a governor that will sign the legislation, and you guys can make that happen. So that's the governor doing his thing out, you know, beating the drum for some other GOP candidates. So, you know, we're into now the major part of the race up to November. November 8th is Election Day here in Arkansas, October 24th. Early voting will begin. We're not that far away from it now. And so people will be starting to cast their ballots for whom they want to fill in as you know, governor, AG, senator. The latest poll numbers coming out of Talk Politics and Business, as we talked earlier during the show today, show Bozeman with a commanding lead over his challenger, Sarah Sanders Huckabee with a commanding lead over the challenger for her, and the biggest lead by any of the candidates in the top constitutional offices is Tim Griffin as AG. He's leading by 17 points over his challenger. So things are playing out basically the way I think everybody thought they would. And it was mentioned in the article that I was reading, something that people need to take into consideration is that the candidates really haven't started unloading their money yet. That will start happening in the next week or two. And when that happens, many people believe that the 11 to 17 point leads that the incumbents have or the Republicans have are going to be, you know, they're going to blow the races wide open because they've got the money to get a lot of TV commercials and a lot of radio commercials on and a lot of digital commercials on as well. So keep that in mind, that's still to come. The race hasn't been fully engaged yet. It will happen within the next 2 weeks, though. know that October will be very, very busy for all the candidates. They'll be out, they're going to be out stumping for every vote that's out there. And right now it looks like Arkansas will be increasingly red, even redder than it has been in the past, with all of the people that are up for election coming up. Looks like Republicans are going to carry most of those races that are going to be going on. All right, we need to take a break. We got to get to Bobby. I'll get some news for you. Then we got some other stories. I want to talk about that story dealing with the all-volunteer force of the military. And is it in trouble? We'll get to that and other stories here on the Dave Elswick Show. East End Towing and what they can do for you. If you happen to break down here in our general area and you need a tow, you call East End Towing. They know what to do no matter the circumstance, whether it's your car, whether it's a trailer you're pulling, whether it's a camper you're pulling. If something goes wrong, call East End Towing and they'll take good care of you. No matter the situation, they know what they're doing. I mean, look, they belong to the Arkansas Tow and Recovery Board. They're licensed, they're insured, and every truck is permitted. So know that not only do they know what they're doing, but they have the necessary insurance and things of consequence that if something would happen, they can take good care of your car. The phone number is 501. 888-8849, 501-888-8849, and you just give them a call, and they'll help you out. I just flipped on the monitor here in the studio, catching up where they're at with the Queen's travels between Westminster Abbey and Windsor Castle, and they're getting close. They're not that far away. You can see the castle now in the distance as they're walking. They have walked about 22 miles to go between Westminster and Windsor. They are closing in for the final internment of the Queen. And people that are watching this on both sides of the highway, I don't know what name of the highway it is, looks to me to be 20, 25 people deep, if not deeper, maybe 100 deep. There's tens of thousands of people that have lined this road carrying the Queen's coffin. They've moved it from the gun carriage cart that they had. It is now in the hearse, and they're driving it to Windsor Castle as we speak. Well, I talked about this earlier, and I wanted to talk about it a little bit more because it's something that we're going to have to deal with here in our country. And that is the U.S. military's all-volunteer force, or the alphabet soup it's known by, AVF. And it slowly looks like coming to an end. It started in 73. I was at that point in 73, I had turned 20 years old. And it was a great idea as long as you had the people who wanted to be in it and you had the people that knew something about the military and so they wanted to take a part in the defense of their country. That's changing. In the 50 years since conscription ended, the AVF produced the high-quality force it promised. And oh, we were able to send our troops into harm's way, and they did a great job of carrying out their job and doing what they were supposed to do. But that's changing. The armed forces now are struggling to meet their recruiting goals like rarely before. The Army is the most affected, projected to fall short by up to 15,000 soldiers, with a large deficit expected next year. Experts point to a variety of reasons, such as insufficient pay and benefits, a difficult work-life environment. If you want to see, you know, tough on families, be in the military. A difficult work-life environment. The culture wars now coming into the military as far as trans soldiers and, you know, men who identify as women and want to be able to wear women's garb in the military, things of that nature. COVID, with the vaccination requirements that if you didn't get vaccinated, they were washing you out of the service. It's another problem. And then a strong job market that we have here in the country at this time. But even if all of those were fixed, the core issues driving the all-volunteer force decline still won't be reversed. Let's talk a little bit about this. The fact is that the pool of Americans aged 17 to 24, and those are the main people you're going to pull from to join into the military, who are qualified and interested in serving, continues to shrink. In 2018, 71% of the 34 million young people could not meet the military's entry requirements. And why? Well, it's due mostly to obesity, drug use, physical and mental health problems, and criminal misconduct. Now, 4 years later, it's not gotten better. The numbers in all of those instances have gone higher. Further, of the 23% eligible to serve, another 10% don't meet the military's academic standards. Worse, of the 3.5 million young Americans remaining, only 9% have a proclivity to want to serve. A nation of 332 million people has to be able to do better than that. The numbers are all heading in the wrong direction, driven by broader cultural and lifestyle trends and a population unfamiliar with the less than 1% of the U.S. population in uniform that protects them. Think about that for a moment. 1% of our population fills in all the positions right now in the military and keeps you safe. When the draft ended in 73, most young people had a family connection to the armed forces who could explain military life and encourage service to country. And we're talking about the baby boomers here. And most baby boomers' parents served in the military in some capacity during Korea or World War II. And so could talk about why they did it, what it was like when they did it, and most of those people believed in our country and wanted to protect our country. Today, that number is far lower. Major reductions in the size of the U.S. military and in the number of bases across the country after the Cold War contributed to the problem. A knowledge gap has grown over time due to civilians' lack of interaction with those in uniform. This has led to an identity gap that inhibits many from considering a stint in the armed forces. It's no mystery why a military caste has developed in America, with nearly 80% of today's service members who's had a family member that served. All of this affects a broader set of civil-military relations with which the nation is wrestling with right now. The scale and scope of these trends are beyond the ability of the Pentagon to remedy. There are actions the services can and are taking But these only address the problem at the margins, because the ability of the military to defend the country depends directly on a sizable force of top-notch volunteers. This is a national challenge that must be addressed at the highest level. I mean, I know there's schools around now that won't even let the military come in and talk to the kids. You can't do that. I don't think that it's that much of a problem here in Arkansas, but in other states it is. So the kids never have the National Guard come in and talk to them. They never have the Army, Air Force, Navy, Marines, Coast Guard come in and talk to them and answer their questions. That means the White House and Congress are going to have to work together to reverse the underlying trends. They could begin by standing up a bipartisan commission of esteemed leaders, much like President Nixon did in 1969 when he decided to end conscription. This time, rather than creating the AVF, the new panel's mission would be to save it. As such, commissioners must focus on the key issues: increasing the pool of young people qualified to serve and raising their interest in doing so, for reasons that also extend beyond the military's needs. The commission should look at ways to improve the health and fitness of America's youth, review and update eligibility requirements, expand junior ROTC nationally, create new ways for civilians to interact with their military brethren, eliminate misconceptions about military life, and ensure recruiters unfettered access to high schools across America. Meanwhile, the Pentagon must steer away from lowering standards, reducing the size of the military, or creating hollow combat formations. We must field the force we need to win our nation's wars, not take shortcuts. The president and lawmakers working with governors as appropriate must also educate and inspire our youth by addressing their concerns, extolling the virtues of military service, discussing the benefits and opportunities that come with answering the call to duty. They should also seek the assistance of sports figures, entertainers, and others who are influential with American youth. A message along the lines of "be healthy, keep fit, avoid trouble, and consider serving your country in uniform" would be a good start. With the threats from China and elsewhere, we cannot risk our future by ignoring those issues. Most solutions will take years to bear fruit. And a return to conscription is not the answer. But if we are to deter war, be victorious if it comes, and win the 21st century, we will need to maintain a sizable, high-quality force of volunteers. That means today's leaders must act now to educate and inspire the great next American generation to serve. And also, as an aside, we need to get away from, doing things that make the military a social experiment, like making everybody get vaccinated and be a lab rat. Need to get away from that as well. All right, we got one more segment for you here on the Dave Elswick Show. It's just something for you to talk about with your family, talk about amongst yourselves. And we'll continue here on the Dave Elswick Show when we come back at 101.1 FM, The Answer. Let's talk about something that's affecting a lot of you. You who are getting ready to retire or have already retired. Well, stubborn inflation is continuing to bring pain as it's chipping away at consumers' buying power, but the impact could be more far-reaching as the high cost of living upends Americans' plans for their golden years. Dr. David Phillips, who's a big-time economist, has been arguing that decades of unchecked government spending coupled with actions of the Federal Reserve made today's inflation inevitable, and warns that investors must adjust and prepare now for the long haul. While the Labor Department's latest consumer price index shows the cost of everyday goods rose 8.3% year over year in August, Phillips told business organizations the actual hit to Americans' wallets is likely twice that. What's worse, he says, is that he sees inflation sticking around because with federal spending run amok, there is little the central bank can do to rein in the problem. If you're raising interest rates, and we're expecting another interest rate rise coming up in the next few weeks from the Federal Reserve of 75 basis points, and you're trying to tighten up the money supply, but on the other side, the federal government continues to spend money like a drunken sailor and dumping more and more money into the economy and hyper-stimulating the economy. What the Federal Reserve is doing is going to have limited results. Phillips predicted the inflation surge last fall is worrisome. He says he read the tea leaves as the government continued to print trillions of dollars to fight the pandemic with programs like unemployment benefits on steroids, stimulus payments, and the long extended pause on student loan payments. But he says the writing was already on the wall that inflation would balloon. COVID spending just accelerated it. Even pre-COVID, we had years and years of increasing budget deficits and national debt. It's been stacking, stacking, and stacking, he said. The government being able to kick the can down the road was going to break. Still, never-ending pandemic perks like student loan forgiveness continues to fuel inflation further with no end in sight. He expects the U.S. economy to be anemic for the next decade or so. Which he says changes the picture for many of the people relying entirely on a 401k, a model which relies on the conventional idea that the economy is always going to grow. People thought they were going to have their nest egg that by financial metrics would be enough, he says. So I think the wake-up call is to understand it's not going to be the same. We're in a different time altogether today. They're going to need probably more than they thought. They're going to need, which is not good. Now, he says, people need to protect themselves and warns that fixed income streams like annuities will not be able to produce the lifestyle needs of people who will depend on them years down the road. He's a big believer a lot of this stuff, and he's a big believer in investing in tangible assets like real estate or a business, which he says have the best potential to keep pace with inflation. And he's got the track record to prove it. He's a former dentist whose daughter, now a healthy 30-year-old, was blindsided by epilepsy, late-stage liver failure, and leukemia when she was only 12. In order to care for her during her health crisis, Phillips sold his practice, invested the proceeds in real estate so that he could support his family with a passive income. His colleagues from the dental industry soon began asking him how he was making ends meet, and he began offering them tips. Before long, he had so many inquiries, he became a formal coach and now runs an investing community called Freedom Founders. He says the main question Freedom Founders members have when they join the group is whether they have enough saved to slow down and retire. But as dentists, they tend to have higher incomes than the average American. So he goes on to talk about that. You should read the story on Fox News. It will give you some real information that you can use. All right, just about out of time. I got to get out of here tomorrow. I'm traveling. I'm flying to Washington, D.C. State Senator Kim Hammer will be in to fill the show tomorrow. And then I'll be back on the air with you Wednesday and Thursday with all kinds of guests on with me to talk about illegal immigration and the things that are happening with that. On Friday, I leave for vacation. I won't be back for a couple of weeks. I'll be back on the 10th of October. That's when I'll be back. Got Nick Horton going to fill in with me, Ryan Norris, Ken Yang, Alan Kerr, State Senator Hammer, Robert Steinbach, and others. So you're going to be well taken care of, hear a lot of discussion about the issues of the day. Until we talk again on Wednesday morning, you have a great afternoon, and I'll join you again from Washington, D.C. on Wednesday right here on The Dave Elswick Show.
Star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.